3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
This is your tech news briefing for Thursday, April 13th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Therapy can be quite a personal experience, but using virtual reality can make it even more so. Our health reporter Brianna Abbott joins us later in the show to discuss how doctors are individualizing VR scenarios to help patients deal with trauma, phobias, and more. That's after these headlines. We report exclusively the House Judiciary Committee has subpoenaed the Federal Trade Commission for documents related to the agency's privacy investigation of Twitter. That's according to a committee aide and documents viewed by the Wall Street Journal. Republican Representative Jim Jordan, who is leading the committee, authorized the move on the grounds that the FTC hasn't cooperated with previous written and verbal requests for information, according to the aide. In a letter accompanying the subpoena, Jordan said the FTC made, quote, inappropriate and burdensome demands of Twitter and its owner, Elon Musk. An FTC spokesman called the subpoena unnecessary and said the agency has made multiple attempts to brief Jordan's staff on the investigation. And speaking of Twitter, National Public Radio plans to quit the platform following a dispute over how the broadcaster's account is labeled. Yesterday, the independent public broadcaster said it would no longer actively maintain its flagship @NPR account or any other official NPR Twitter accounts. Last week, Twitter labeled NPR as U.S. state-affiliated media and later changed the description to government-funded media. NPR objected to both labels. Less than 1% of its budget comes from federal grants. Twitter has upended its labeling system for verified accounts since Elon Musk took over the platform last year. Musk said in an interview with the British Broadcasting Corporation, which has also complained about its government-funded label, that he would change the description to publicly funded. The New York Police Department plans to deploy robotic dogs. Officials said Tuesday the city had acquired 2 so-called digi-dogs and plans to use them to inspect possible hazardous materials or to approach barricaded suspects. The NYPD experimented with robotic dogs in 2021, but then abandoned them over backlash from groups concerned about over-militarization of police. Opponents reiterated those concerns on Tuesday. Mayor Eric Adams, a former NYPD captain, said the criticism was coming from a vocal minority and compared police use of robotics to the earlier adoption of fingerprint technology. And a little-known Israeli vendor sold tools used to hack iPhones of journalists and politicians around the globe. Research group Citizen Lab said the vendor, known as Quadream, marketed spyware that silently exploits Apple's iPhone software. Citizen Lab found that the attack worked without requiring any user interaction in what is known as a zero-click attack, meaning the victims would have been defenseless against it. Our tech editor Brad Olson says U.S. authorities and tech companies have become increasingly concerned about spyware makers.
Apple basically tried to patch the ability of the zero click to work, and they kind of created some software that would protect users. So that's one thing that happened. And then the Biden administration is trying to go through and do some work that would identify, like, what is a possible authorized use of spyware. So in a democratic country that has an established legal system, there are legitimate situations in which a court order could give someone the ability to deploy some kind of spyware that allows you to glean data or get information about what someone's doing on their phone or online. And so I think the administration is trying to codify what instances should be allowed and what instances should not.
An Apple spokesman said the company hasn't detected signs that the attack was used after March 2021, when the newest iOS at the time was shipped. Representatives for Quadream didn't respond to requests for comment. Coming up, doctors are tailoring virtual reality sessions for their patients. We'll discuss the complications, limitations, and the purpose of these immersive experiences when we come back.
Here's what's trending now. You can defer payments of a full NetSuite implementation for 6 months. 33,000 companies have already upgraded to NetSuite, gaining visibility and control over their financials, inventory, HR, e-commerce, and more. February 1st through March 15th, 2023, everything they need to reduce manual processes, boost efficiency, build forecasts, and increase productivity. Whether your business generates millions or hundreds of millions of dollars, take advantage of this special financing offer of no payments or interest for 6 months at netsuite.com/wallstreet. That's netsuite.com/wallstreet.
Virtual reality can transport you to a whole new world, relaxing on a beach or flying through space without leaving your home. But it can also help bring people back to places they have been before, places of trauma that they may need to deal with. And this is a growing area for therapy. With me to discuss how VR technology is helping therapists and patients is our health reporter, Brianna Abbott. Hi, Brianna. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So VR therapy in the realm of mental health treatment, where does this fit? What are therapists trying to address with this kind of treatment?
So therapists and mental health providers generally are doing a lot when it comes to trying to find ways to use VR to help patients. And one of the ways that they're doing that is doing something called virtual reality exposure therapy, which is sort of a virtual version of the longstanding technique called exposure therapy, where people confront sort of memories or fears, you know, a traumatic event that happened. And they go over that sort of with a therapist to sort of overcome the feeling of constantly being under threat and sort of trying to retrain their brain to realize that they're not in that danger again.
So is this kind of treatment, this sort of work for anybody who has trauma, or is it for a specific group of people?
So this can be done for anyone who has trauma or fears, like they use it a lot for people with fear of heights, something like that. If the fear is extreme and it interrupts your daily life or any sort of trauma. And so what's happening with VR exposure therapy is a lot of the work historically has been done with veterans, with military-like scenarios. And now researchers are really trying to expand it beyond veterans to help folks in the civilian setting that might have PTSD for other reasons.
Can you describe how this works? I mean, I'm sure a lot of listeners will have seen, maybe even used a VR headset, but what's it like when you use it for therapy?
So what it's like for therapy right now, at least, is that most people have to go into a clinic with a clinician there. Say you're using the military sort of base scenario that's called Brave Mind. They have 14 different scenarios that you can start in. And then the clinician can actually sort of change certain things about it. Like you can change what kind of car you're sitting in or, you know, how many people are with you. And they even have little canisters that can waft smells over each of you. So you can smell diesel fuel or things like that. And then the clinician will sort of walk you through that memory as much as possible, because an issue with PTSD is avoidance, but really helping people's symptoms is reckoning with the thing that happened. And so they use sort of this VR therapy to sort of really slowly immerse the person in a similar setting and sort of go over some of those details.
You mentioned that historically this has been used for veterans, but that it's expanding out to other people to deal with their trauma. How are they creating the scenarios for this, specifically when it might be a very personal or unique circumstance that somebody went through?
So they're doing a few different things in that there are some researchers that are going out and taking photos of bars or certain locations and then recreating that in a 3D environment in virtual reality to sort of give them more options. And then there's also quite a bit of coding involved as well. So, you know, they'll take some photos, they'll give it to some programmers. Sometimes they will take objects or things off of the internet. Some folks are working on pulling archival historical footage from recent historical events that you can cheaply and more easily sort of design a lot of these scenarios that get closer to individuals.
Can you give us an example of one of the clinicians who's using VR?
Dr. Deborah Bedell, who is at the University of Central Florida at the RESTORES Clinic, which is a research clinic for post-traumatic stress disorder. And they were using the VR Brave Mind system. But patients actually started coming to them and requesting scenarios that they didn't have, like something like a swimming pool or the Pulse nightclub shooting because they were in Florida. And so they got requests for all these scenarios that they weren't able to fulfill. And so what they've done is, you know, they started taking objects or people or cars from the internet and took photos of things like surf sides so programmers could replicate the simulations. And now they're sort of working on a new platform or a service that could help create VR scenarios for other clinicians.
VR headsets are something that a lot of people have just at home. I mean, is this something they can do by themselves?
It depends on what you are trying to do. So if you are trying to do something like, say you have a fear of public speaking, you could potentially download software that's just a crowd of people that you can sort of get up there and put your headset on and practice speaking in front of. So when you're talking about someone doing this independently, it really depends on the specific use case.
What did some of the experts tell you are the maybe drawbacks or limitations to this kind of technology?
So there are some limitations, including that a lot of the research shows that this works about as well as other therapies like traditional exposure therapy. And a lot of the research shows that it works best in conjunction with classic treatment as well. So it's definitely not the end all be all. It is like a valuable tool that clinicians can use, but won't necessarily solve a lot of these big problems. When it comes to the technology, it's really good at animating different locations. But when it comes to like people moving, the graphics look worse. And so it's not 100% yet on just the VR side. And we're not also at the point where we can do a lot of these entirely at home. Like some of these can be done directly with a home headset, but some of them, like for the Brave Mind scenario, still require someone to come into a clinician's office because the adjustment of the scenarios takes more computing power right now that requires a person to go in.
One concern people often have with technology, and particularly technology related to healthcare, is about their data and where it's stored, how it's used. If you're creating these very personal VR scenarios, should people be at all concerned about how this information is being stored or potentially shared with a company?
Data privacy is always a concern. With the VA, they recently launched an at-home trial for chronic pain, and they actually send headsets home with people. And part of that is because the veterans might not have headsets at home, but also there are data issues there. So you sort of want to keep it on your own system. And so there's not a clear answer for that yet, but that's definitely something that is a concern that's going to have to be worked out.
Okay, that's WSJ Health reporter Brianna Abbott. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Discover the extraordinary ideas shaping our future at the Future of Everything Festival when the Wall Street Journal brings together leaders from business, science, sports, and culture, May 2nd through 4th at Spring Studios in New York City. Register today using code PODCAST to receive 20% off your ticket. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.